Welcome into the newest edition of the Naked Bootleg Podcast. We are here with a very special guest, a friend of mine from NFL Network, Greg Rosenthal, fellow Patriots fan, although I don't know after last night if we want to take that claim or not. But Greg, thanks so much for coming on, man.
Oh, please, don't be a normal Patriots fan and start disowning them after one loss after five Super Bowl titles. Come on, Evan.
I said that to you last night when we were texting about this, and I was a little heated about Pat Nation on Twitter because they were everyone was jumping off the ledge after one game, and they go and they wear the clown towels and the clown T-shirts, and they gloat about all the Super Bowls and how, you know, Brady's the GOAT no matter what anybody says, and then they lose one game and they suck again.
Yeah, I know. It's as quick as you can, you know. They show. I mean, it's funny that like the place cleared out as soon as the Chiefs went up 35-27. It was pretty bad.
Yeah, if you want to get Patriots fans mad, just mention that the Foxborough crowd is a little fickle, and if you've gone around to a lot of the stadiums in the NFL, it's not one of the best home fields. It's kind of one of the it's an up and down one, but they are
it's a little bit
of a spoiled crowd, and it is what it is.
My uncle has had season tickets for a very long time, been going to games with him for years, and he was always one of those guys that wanted to beat the Route 1 traffic out of there, because it is a parking lot, and I was always the one that was like, no, we're staying until, you know, zeros are on the clock, and he couldn't stand it, but I would agree with you there, and we're so spoiled as Patriots fans. I mean, they play one bad game in week one of the season, and this is where we're at. But first question I wanted to ask you was, after the game, someone asked this in Tom Brady's press conference, and his answer was pretty interesting, and he said that they were lacking some energy and competitiveness out there, and that it's not usually something that you see from a Bill Belichick coach team, Greg.
No, I think they faded in the second half. You know, week ones are strange. You know, the Patriots have mostly been really good in week ones, but you see a lot of strange results, especially in the second half, where sometimes teams fade. You have to have that extra gear to help you through playing 70 snaps out of nowhere when most of these guys have played 15, 20, 25 snaps at most in a single game in the preseason. And you couldn't help but think about the Super Bowl when watching the fourth quarter last night, because it was really other than the score, it was really a total reversal of the fourth quarter of the Super Bowl, where the Patriots, even though they were ahead in offensive plays, ran out of gas, it appeared, gave up 21 points straight in the fourth quarter, and then the offense was a huge part of that. Four drives with only two first downs in the fourth quarter, of course, no points, basically mirroring what Atlanta did offensively in the fourth quarter of the Super Bowl.
Yeah, me and Evan were talking about earlier that sort of effect, and it looked like on that last touchdown drive by the Chiefs where it was a long hunt run and then West, I mean, it was almost as if the Pats sort of gave up, and you could get a sense from talking to the guys in the locker room that the attitude towards the end of the game just wasn't acceptable by Pat's standards, and you know it was sort of an ugly look for them.
It was, and you know, on the telecast, Chris Collinsworth was talking about how this, you know, wasn't necessarily the Patriots defense, but it was almost as if he was hinting that there was like a ton of injuries. There really wasn't. It was Dont'a Hightower, who might be the most, you know, irreplaceable guy on the entire defense, but the rest of the defense, and for the most part, the offense, these are the guys that they're rolling with. I mean, they have newer players on offense in general, but this is going to be their team, and it's just a new team. And you've seen it with the Patriots over the years that they're not usually. I think September is a good time to play them, and I said this on our podcast going into this game. I think Kansas City is kind of a tough team to play early, especially offensively. If you watch them in the preseason,
yeah,
they were one of the teams that you could tell is a veteran team that knows what they're doing, and I think was going to come into the season ready to go, you know, a little bit where they left off last season, and that's how it played out. When you have such a good offensive coach and you have a veteran offensive line and a veteran quarterback, it's like their offense came into the game strong. And I also am not panicking, because if you had a couple different things go the Patriots' way earlier in the game, it's a much different game.
Yeah,
that was on my second watch this morning. That was definitely the takeaway that I had was, although it was ugly in the fourth quarter, certainly towards the end was definitely ugly. Overall, it was, you know, a pretty close game, and the Patriots even had the opportunity to be up by a couple more scores than they were at different points in the game. You know, obviously Gronk dropped a touchdown, or, you know, it was a tough catch, but could have had a touchdown, and there was a few other instances where they left points on the board. But another thing that, you know, you said that these are the guys that they're rolling with, which is absolutely true, but towards the end of that game, you look at on the field, and the wide receivers are Brandon Cooks, Hogan, and Dorsett, two guys that are playing their first games as Patriots in week one, you know, in the regular season. So I think that one positive, Greg, that you can take from this is that, you know, they're going to take a couple weeks for Brady to get his full rapport with guys like Cooks and Dorsett and Dwayne Allen and some of the running backs.
No doubt. I mean, two of the three running backs are new, and it's one of the reasons I think the Malcolm Mitchell injuries, you know, slipped under the radar. First of all, they don't win the Super Bowl without Malcolm Mitchell. He's basically the best rookie. He had the best rookie wide receiver performance you can make the case in the entire Brady Belichick era. I mean, this is a guy I think we'd be talking about as a potential future star if they weren't so loaded at the position. So losing him on top of Edelman really took away that depth that they had. And then suddenly you're playing Amendola more than you want to. And even though he had some numbers before he had the concussion, I think there was a couple moments where you thought, wow, if Edelman was there, he would have made the guy miss, or he would have made that catch. And suddenly guys are in roles where you wanted Amendola to be that fourth, maybe fifth receiver. Suddenly he's playing too big of a role early, and you're right. So many of these guys on both sides of the ball are playing much different roles, either weren't on the team last year or, you know, they're playing different roles than they were a year ago.
Yeah, I do think that played a part. And you made a really good point about Mitchell, just because, you know, he's a guy that, you know, has a trust built up with Brady, built off that Super Bowl, and really all of last year he was a consistent, you know, intermediate guy, and then he would make plays after the catch too. So, you know, and then, you know, when they're rolling Dorsett out there in the fourth quarter, it's sort of a desperation move, I thought. So, you know, they really, you know, guys out there were saying they after the game that they have an identity, they just have to execute. I don't think they necessarily do have an identity at this point. That's something they're going to have to figure out. Not saying they won't, but saying it's sort of, you know, they're still sort of figuring out what works with them right now. And last night, you know, you look at a guy like Hogan. They were using those jet sweeps and stuff with him that didn't work after a while. And Hogan really wasn't getting open either. So all that's a concern. And I think a lot of it is a domino effect losing Edelman, because, you know, he's a guy that you could always trust to get open and make a play when they needed to. And having him not on the field was obviously a huge, huge loss.
Yeah, I think that, you know, it was apparent that a lot of Brady's targets were much deeper down the field than he would probably like and is probably accustomed to, especially in recent seasons. You know, throwing those deep bombs to guys like Brandon Cooks way downfield isn't at 40 necessarily something that Brady is comfortable doing all the time. But
although he had a pretty sweet one.
He did have, yeah, he dropped one.
I can remember.
And then the post, it was a really good play by Mitchell, the KC quarterback, that he almost had him on that one too. That would have been a big play late in the game. But let's talk about the defense, because it was, you know, a lot of a disaster on that side of the ball. First of all, what was the Jordan Richards thing? Is this a Jordan Devy gets to start in week one type thing, Greg, or is this a role of his, or what's going on with that?
Well, he made one of the best plays of the night, you know, to force the turnover early on the first play by Kareem Hunt. They've always seemed to like him more than I think the average fan watching the game really has. So I think there's absolutely, yeah, I think he's going to be on, I don't think he's going to be a plain linebacker, I don't know, throughout much of the season like he did in the second half, but he's going to be, I think, close to an every down guy along with Chung. I mean, I'm not sure what Chung's snap count ended up being in that game. I know he was a little in and out late, but yeah, I think he's Jordan Richards is going to be a big factor. Dietrich Wise is going to be a factor. Butler, you know, Lawrence Guy, who played, it seemed like he played a decent game. I mean, these are guys that are going to have to be factors for them.
I think Belichick answered the question in the conference call this morning saying, in part, one of the reasons that Richards was out there is Kansas City rolled out so many receivers. So I think that was a sort of a matchup thing. They had six defensive backs out there a lot of times last night, which was very interesting. I do think that's a matchup thing. I don't think you'll see Richards out there as much, but they wanted more speed out there, it seemed. But the thing is, you know, I don't think Richards is that fast to begin with, and
right.
I feel like, but you know, what else are they going to do if they wanted more speed out there? They had pretty much all their defensive backs out there.
Well, I'm looking at the snap count right now, and Eric Rowe played 36 snaps, and Richards played 41, Chung 45, you know, Harmon played 62. So you're, I mean, they all, you know, McCourty and Malcolm Butler were out there the entire game. So you're right. They essentially had six defensive backs on the field, most snaps.
Yeah.
I think it definitely speaks to the fact that they really do not have a linebacker that they trust in coverage right now.
Yes.
So much, you know, that they have to put a guy like Jordan Richards, a safety, who is the slow safety at that, out there just to cover up a weakness that they really don't have. I mean, Van Noy looked okay at times doing it last year.
He played
year.
The whole, looking at the snap count, he
the
played
whole
every
way.
Single snap.
Yeah, yeah. He's going to be a guy that's going to obviously be a huge factor on this defense. I think that speed, overall speed that we saw last night was an issue. We saw it in the Super Bowl. It was an issue. You know, Kansas City, their run game, they basically just watched the Super Bowl back and ran a bunch of those toss, crack, sweeps and stuff like that that really burned the Patriots. You know, a lot of people thought that that was because, you know, Devontae Freeman is extremely good, but it turns out that Kareem Hunt is also pretty good and can also do those same exact things. So, you know, that's definitely something to monitor. And the injury, you know, bringing up Dante Hightower in the conversation, you know, not having him out there to set the edge and push those running plays back inside is just huge, and you saw it right away.
Yeah, I agree. I think you're going to see more running backs like that on the schedule, too. I mean, if you look at the next few weeks, it's obviously the Saints have guys like that. I mean, I wonder what Carolina's going to do when they have Christian McCaffrey to throw out plays like that, too. I mean, that's definitely an issue going forward.
Like, I've been banging this drum throughout the offseason, and look, the Patriots made the Super Bowl in the 2011 season with I would say, even less pass rush pure talent, and they've won plenty of games with some lackluster front seven, especially kind of early in this Gronk era. But I've been saying all offseason, I'm sure Patriots fans have, but nationally it's not really talked about as much. Like, who are their guys to win one-on-one pass rushes? You know, teams right now, they want three of those guys, three of those edge rushers in a perfect world. You definitely want two. Now, Trey Flowers is an incredible player. He's a little different mold, but I would throw him into that mix. But other than that, it's like you don't really see that guy on their roster, so they're going to have to scheme ways to do it, or they're going to have to hope Hightower can somewhat play that role. But I don't think there's any magic answer of finding some guy who's just a terror and is going to beat tackles one-on-one. I don't know if that's on the roster.
No, And with Hightower, you know, it was more, he wasn't really adding much to the pass rush even when he was out there. It was more that his you know, defense against the run was the key part of it with him when he came out. And you know, It's interesting because Dietrich Wise, you know, had some moments. Maybe he could be a guy that kind of, gives them something of a pass rush. And obviously you mentioned Trey Flowers, who was really good again last night. But, with these cornerbacks that they have with Butler and Gilmore in the safety play, you know, you think you would see a little bit more blitzing. Obviously, the last couple of years, the Patriots really have not been a blitz-heavy team. Last year, they were towards the bottom in the league in blitz percentage. But if this is going to be the story and Alex Smith is going to go 27 for 27 on passes of 10 yards or less against you because you, you know, have no pressure and no traffic really in the short part of the field, and I really think that they're going to have to start getting into some people's faces with those corners and cutting at the line and blitzing a little bit.
Yeah, I think that would be the natural outlier of that strategy. I think Wise really showed something to me, at least. He was able to split double teams at times. He was powerful. But like you said, Greg, they'll need more. They'll need, you know, at least three guys, and those guys aren't there yet. They haven't identified them. Maybe they'll move guys around. This is a versatile looking team. But it's just, you know, it wasn't there consistently. Smith, that offensive line of the Chiefs, both pass blocking and run blocking especially, really sort of manhandled that front seven. That's a real concern.
You have to give the Chiefs a lot of credit. I mean, I think, you know.
No, we're not giving them enough credit right now. It's a really good game.
I mean, I rewatched that Steelers-Chiefs game a few times for various reasons, and first of all, Alex Smith didn't play nearly as bad as people thought in that game. But they easily could have won that game. I mean, they were one of the five best teams in the NFL at the end of last year, and I think they're going to be a good team this year offensively. But I also look at the Patriots' schedule, and they're playing in New Orleans, and they're playing in Tampa, and they're going to play in Pittsburgh, and you play Oakland and Luck in the Chargers. So it's like they're playing so many of the really good passing attacks that – you know, Belichick is going to have to figure out how to manage it. So, I mean, you give the Chiefs plenty of credit, but just looking at the teams that are on their schedule, it's like they're going to be playing many of the best offenses, many of the best passing attacks in the league. That's just how the schedule is going up against the AFC West and the NFC South, who, to me, are the two best divisions in football.
Not going into this Patriots schedule, some of those strength of schedule metrics, said that they had the easiest schedule in the NFL, stuff like that. And then I looked at it, I was like, they play the NFC South and the AFC West. So they're two of the most loaded divisions in this entire league.
They're the two best, and they're definitely the two best offensively. And I actually don't think it's that close. I think those two divisions are both so good that any of those eight teams like can be factors, not just in the playoffs, but, you know, contending for deep into the playoffs.
I'd agree with that.
Right, so, you know, going forward, though, obviously, you know, bad game last night, but the sky is not falling. And I don't think that you think, Greg, that there's an overall talent issue on defense that the Patriots can't overcome.
No, not to manage the game. And, you know, Belichick is Belichick. I'm always going to believe that he's going to figure things out over the course of the season. I think they're just going to – they're not going to be the number one scoring defense this year. I think that's fair to expect. And I think one thing that I've always believed about the Patriots, and it hammered home when Michael Lombardi, who obviously worked there, said it recently too, is like September is evaluation time still in the NFL. It's like a second part of training camp because of the way preseason is structured now. And you see that with the Patriots especially. I mean, Belichick is usually figuring out kind of what he has early in the season, and I think Patriots fans could get used to a little bit of ups and downs early, and then you hope that they figure it out, which they basically always do, and that they're playing much better, you know, and have goals a little more set like last season later in the season.
Right. Yeah, I looked this up last night because I was curious about that point, and their win percentage in September is still right around 70%, which is obviously ridiculous. But their win percentage in December is like 85%. And they just get so much better as the season goes on that they drop a little bit in November. But October, is higher than September and so on and so forth. So it always seems to get better in New England. And Belichick always talks about peaking at around, you know, Thanksgiving, you know, first couple weeks of December, right around that time period. So it's still a long work in progress. But overall, what did you think of Brandon Cooks last night? I thought that he drew some penalties, obviously had the big throw and a couple good moments in there.
Yeah, I think he's working it out with Brady, but if you look at this team, and I think Belichick looked at the Super Bowl and thought, gosh, we need guys that can beat one-on-one coverage. And David Carr made this point on NFL Network, so I'm stealing it, but he basically thought, look, the Chiefs challenged the Patriots by playing them man-to-man, pressing them at the line of scrimmage, which is basically exactly what the Falcons did, which worked for three quarters in the Super Bowl. And they're going to make these guys who are a little smaller, you know, beat them one-on-one. And, you know, Cooks could struggle with that at times, but he also, unlike anyone else on the team, can just take the top off and make you pay for that strategy. So I think, his presence is bigger than ever after these injuries.
Yeah, I think he's as advertised in terms of a deep threat, but I also feel like you can't sort of use him as a crutch in this offense. I think he's got to be, I think you need to find somebody to do what Amendola did last night and to do what Edelman does in this offense. That's really where the strength of this offense comes from, is the short and intermediate routes. And, you know, Cooks can be somebody who makes those big plays and everything like that, but that's not always reliable. I mean, those are low percentage plays for the most part. And they're not always going to be there. So, I think if this offense is going to really, you know, find its rhythm, it's got to find it with the shorter passes of the Amendola, if he's going to remain the guy for that, is really got to be the key person to step up. I think it was a bit of a concern, though, that that Hogan was so blanketed when he's somebody that's also such a deep threat. I think, you know, if you have all those guys working in concert and getting open, then this offense is pretty unstoppable. But I don't think you really saw that last night. I mean, you know, Cooks was getting open most of the time, and he was running past guys. And if you can have that consistently, that's obviously a good thing. But you know, if you have guys like Amendola and Hogan also in the mix, getting open, then that's your goal. You want everybody going.
Greg, were you surprised that they didn't run the ball more last night?
No, they weren't that effective consistently running it. So I wouldn't say, I wouldn't say I was surprised, because I think they had 3.5 yards per carry. I think they tried to run it. I think it was a normal balance. They had a tough time keeping drives going in the second half, especially the fourth quarter. But no, I wouldn't say I was surprised. I think, you know, just to circle back on what you said about Cooks, like, I've never thought he was a number one receiver. That's not who he is. I expected Julian Edelman to lead the team in yards and receptions this year, regardless. To me, Edelman's the best receiver the Patriots have ever had, in terms of, like, over a long stretch of time in the Tom Brady era. He weirdly is almost underrated, and I thought Cooks was like a perfect complement of 1-1A, but they don't really play those traditional roles. So I think people that are expecting Cooks before or after this injury to be some sort of 1,400-yard type of guy, I don't think that's who he is. I think he's a really valuable guy in the mix, but he's not going to be a guy that goes out and dominates and can do everything.
Way too many Randy Moss comparisons with Brandon Cooks going into this season. I think we all got a little too excited on those ones. But,
And going back to your running back question, running game question, Evan, I think it worked on that one drive when they went with a lot of I formation and drove down the field. That one had a great job blocking. But then I think they went back to it, I think, in the third quarter, and it just wasn't there. And I think you can, you know, sort of see a tendency. I mean, as a defense, when they line up in the I formation, they're usually going to run it. So, you know, teams that sort of get around to it, you know, will have a way of knowing what's coming a little bit. So, you know, I thought they ran the ball well at times. I thought in short yardage at times. But, you know, there were some short yardage plays where they tried to run it to Gillislee and they got stuffed. So, you know, I think it's a developing situation when it comes to the running game. So I still think they, you know, they want to get it going. They want to have balance, but it wasn't quite as good as it could be. But I still think it's got potential to be very good overall, but not quite. It's not a dominant. Like, if you want to just compare it to what the Chiefs did, it's not going to look like that.
Right, yeah, I think that one area, too, with the running backs, they got to get more out of them receiving-wise, you know. James White, 30 yards receiving, just 3 catches, and a lot of that came on 1 catch. Rex Burkhead, I was pretty surprised, only played 10 snaps, I think, last night. Expected a bigger role for him, obviously. 2 guys that, with especially post-Edelman injury, you would think that, you know, that they would go to them a little bit more, but it looked like Kansas City did a pretty good job of covering White, especially out of the backfield.
Yeah, and White had a couple of plays where he came up just short, you know, of the first down, and then they ended up not picking up the first down, and they, of course, had the fourth and shorts that they didn't pick up. I mean, if they pick up those 2 plays, if they picked up both of them, they probably win the game, you know. So it was very small margins, and I think they're going to play that by feel, but they're obviously not afraid to use White in almost any circumstance. I mean, and yes, Mike Gillislee is like the goal line back, but they're not going to be afraid to use White in any circumstance. I mean, James White was the goal line back in the, you know, one of the biggest plays in franchise history, and that worked out.
Right.
You know, they ran him up the middle, so I think they love their backs. I'm not worried about their running game, and I think you're right. I'm surprised they didn't catch as many passes, but this is one game, and I think that back is going to be very difficult to defend in general. That's one part of their team I'm not really worried about.
Yeah, the offense in general looks like it was moving pretty well for the most part. You know, if they had those couple of fourth downs, if they pick those up, obviously it's a big difference. And, you know, they scored 27 points. It sputtered at the end, but overall, I thought that the offense wasn't terrible. It was about as what you would expect from the Patriots and Brady.
Yeah, and I think if you're going back to those running backs catching balls too, you know, if we're talking about things that can possibly, you know, be a replacement for Edelman in the short and intermediate pass game, you know, maybe throwing the ball to the running backs a little bit more is an adjustment they make going forward.
Right. So, Greg, the Saints 9 days from now, I guess, you know, we'll see what the Saints look like this weekend. But another pretty tough matchup, I would say, especially for the defense. So this could they be looking at 0-2? Or all of a sudden, you know, we had the 19-0 talk, and now it's going the other way.
Sure, I have the Saints as a playoff team. I think their defense is, you will see, but I think their defense is a lot better this year. They're going to be starting 5 rookies overall, 3 on the defense, so that's, I promising, but you got to kind of see how it checks out. But you're always surprised if the Saints don't finish as a top 5 offensive team, and their backfield is about as good as any team in the league. So going to the Superdome is a tough ask anytime, and it's definitely going to be a tough ask for this defense. You know, you always have faith in the Patriots, like, bouncing back after a bad loss. So it's not an easy matchup for New Orleans either. But that is not that is anything but just chalk it up to a win going to New Orleans in week 2.
Right, yeah. They play Drew Brees, who has the second highest passer rating, I believe, against the Patriots in the Belichick era. Alex Smith is now up there after last night,
yeah.
So it's getting a little dicey in that. But, Greg, I wanted to ask you one question here, not a serious question, but out of your 3 cohorts there on the ATN podcast, who do you think is the most tortured out of all of them? Because they really, so for people that don't know, Chris Wessling, for the Cincinnati Bengals fan, not so good. Mark Sessler, a Cleveland Browns fan, and our guy Ian Hanzus, who loves to trump the Patriots all day long, is a New York Jets fan. So three teams that are pretty tortured there.
Yeah, Dan was you got to.
I thought he was insufferable last night.
Oh yeah, you have to learn some professionalism when you're writing these articles and doing a podcast immediately afterwards, because he felt like the Jets had just won the Super Bowl. He was so happy after that game. Meanwhile, our producer is a brand new NFL media employee, and she was a Patriots fan wearing an Amendola jersey and was basically apoplectic after the game. But to answer your question, well, Wes gave up being a Bengals fan, and which is
he really does.
I mean, it's not like he watches them or whatever. He dislikes them more than most teams, so that shows that he still has something in his heart, but he's pretty even keeled. He's actually been a pretty big Patriots supporter over the last few years, just because he likes history and he likes good football. I would have to say Mark Sessler. His emotional tides rise and fall with the latest Brown news, I would say, more than basically any human I've ever encountered in terms of their sports fandom. So I am always rooting for the Browns because it's going to make for a happier podcast on Sunday.
You said that, Erica, it's a Patriots fan, the new behind glass, and as a Patriots fan that was used to be at NFL media, that's a tough office to walk into after a loss when you're a past fan.
Oh, you know, let's not throw too many pity parties. There's not that many losses.
That's fair. I didn't want to go back to the office last year if they had lost that Super Bowl. I wasn't showing up for a week if that had happened.
Yeah, you're right. When you're at work and like when they lost to the Broncos in the AFC Championship game, for whatever reason, that was one that particularly stung me because I was convinced that that team was going to win the Super Bowl that year. I'm usually wrong about these things. And, you have to go do it. No one wants to hear you moaning when you're a Patriots fan because they think, well, I wish I was even in these games. But, you know, we know those playoff losses still hurt regardless of how many you win.
Absolutely. What do you got coming down the line here, Greg? Obviously, the preview podcast, I think, is already up, correct? For this weekend?
Yeah, that's up. And then we do a Sunday night recap podcast every week. And they're throwing us on Up to the Minute, which is at 4:00 Eastern on Tuesdays and Fridays or Thursdays, depending on the week. So there you go.
Awesome. Thank you so much for coming on.
All right. It was a lot of fun.
Thanks, Greg.
Once again, a huge thank you to Greg Rosenthal for coming on the pod. As always, go check him out at NFL Network and the Around the NFL podcast. Go check us out on iTunes at the Naked Bootleg podcast. Give us a review. Let us know how we're doing. Rate us. Do all that type of stuff. And check both me and Adam out in the Boston Herald, as always. We'll be back next week, hopefully with another good guest, and we'll talk more Patriots. Look forward to the Saints and get over this loss on opening weekend. Thanks for listening to the Naked Bootleg podcast.